The John Daly Show, Sports.
And hi, everyone. So who goes to the conference championships? We'll have our picks. We'll tell you what we did last week, and we'll also tell you about the wackiness of the first round. We'll discuss the fallout of the Bengals' black eye, and the Bengals are looking worse now. Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown, it was just announced, is out for the game versus the Broncos. Speaking of black eyes, Belichick has one, literally. How did he get it? We have some ridiculous theories for you. More breaking news. The Lions say that Jim Caldwell will stay on as coach next season. We'll have more on that later. Plus, L.A. now has the Rams, maybe the Chargers. We'll give you the latest. You'll hear our takes on the big moves or non-moves. Coaching spots are filling up. We see a pattern. And does this mean the end of the Manziel era in Cleveland? We're going to take your phone calls later in the show. The number to call is 347-426-3484, or drop us a question on Twitter at John Daly Sports. As always, our expert is Eric Snyder. He is the author of a book on the Raiders and the Raider Nation. You can hear him on the Power Hour on 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. Boychuk, wow, what a weekend and a week after.
Sometimes I think, good morning, John. Sometimes I think that the couple of weeks leading up to the two or three weeks leading up to the Super Bowl have more drama than the entire season. And look what's happened. Look what we're going to talk about today. It's crazy.
Well, you know, when you think about it, it's a good point, because we've had some years where the Super Bowls were blowouts, but the playoffs were spectacular. So we might be seeing something like that. Let's get into the games for this week. On Saturday, the Chiefs at the Patriots at 4:30 Eastern on CBS. Patriots are rested and seem to be getting healthier with a lot of folks back. But defensive end Chandler Jones had a bad reaction to synthetic marijuana. Gronk misses a practice. Still, the Chiefs look fabulous this week, but I have the Pats at home. How about you?
I do too, but this is my biggest chance of an upset this week. Now Chris Carter of ESPN came out, and he said that he thinks that Chandler Jones might have smoked some PCP. If that's the case, because the guy walked in, I mean, there's nothing scarier at a police station than a 6'5" black naked man walking in there saying,
Yeah, I mean, no, absolutely.
Those guys had to be that's crazy. And the cops tried to cover it up. Exactly. And if you smoke PCP, it's a problem. Gronk had his knee drained from fluid. And my question is, why did he wait? It was bothering him the week before when they were off. So, I mean, there's problems there with that team. I still like Bill Belichick, John, in a two-week scenario to prepare for you. But the Kansas City Chiefs defense, their defensive line, their defense is just unreal. Witnessed by what they had, the blowout that they did on the Houston Texans last week. I like the Patriots. But again, Eric Snyder's fans for saying this. No one would be shocked if the Kansas City Chiefs won this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we're going to have later on Josh McDaniels possibly being the Titans head coach. And also on the Chiefs side, Doug Peterson, the offensive coordinator, is rumored to be going to the Eagles. So there's some distractions in this game. In addition to that, Belichick gets a black eye. Now, rumor has it you had something to do with that. Is that true?
No, you know what it was? He was probably walking through Boston, and some Southie walked up and said, "Hey, Bill, why don't you want a wicked sweep there? And you know what? You're never going to be as big as the Sox." And Belichick said, "Move on, young man." Smack, boom, black eye. That's how it happened. I have nothing to do with Bill Belichick. You know what? My personality is too strong for Bill Belichick. You know, Bill Belichick acts like that chemistry teacher you had in high school that you fell asleep 3 minutes into his class. I mean, he's just... You know, there's no bigger milquetoast coach in the history of the NFL. That being said, he's probably the best. I mean, you know, isn't it amazing that even though Nick Saban had just won his fourth national championship in 7 years with the Alabama Crimson Tide, he's part of Belichick's tree. They've coached together. They have similar personalities. Yeah. I think Saban has a more of a sense of humor. You can get it out of him. But it's amazing that the two best coaches in their professions, in the pros and the college, have the same personality.
Well, and I think they're just focused on what they do. They don't really care about the entertainment value. They're focused on winning on the field, and that's a big difference. Look at the difference between him and Rex Ryan. But here's what really happened, and I know this because a friend of mine, this happened to his dad. The dad had been widowed for a while, and he met a woman, and he actually had a chance to, you know, perform sexually, but he was having problems, so he went out and got this pump. And it's this pump where you wrap it around your instrument, and you just pump up, and it gets you up so you can perform. The problem is what my friend's dad didn't do is he didn't have it securely wrapped around his package, and the thing actually flew off and hit him right in the head, and he had black eyes just like Bill Belichick did. So I think Belichick was using the pump improperly.
Well, this happened to you when you got let go from real TV. You know, when you were substituted by the great Ahmad Rashad, you were wearing sunglasses for 2 years. Because, you know, John, you really I love the way you can initiate a story about yourself by being your friend. That's the oldest trick in the book. And I'll tell you what, you made Ray-Bans look better than Tom Cruise did in Top Gun and Risky Business. You know, we just might call you John the Pump Daily.
So we just broke two major stories here. Okay, let's get back to the games. Saturday night's late game, Packers at the Cardinals. My gut tells me a blowout for the Cards. I'm going to say the Cards will win. I think it will be a little bit closer. I think the Pack and Aaron Rodgers actually found something a little bit last week, so I don't think they get rolled over, but I do think they lose. Who do you got?
I like everything you just said. I agree with everything you just said, except for the fact that I really believe that somehow, some way, the Packers win this game. Another upset. I saw something.
Wow.
And I always look for adjustments, and I just saw, I know the Redskins are not, the Washington Redskins are not the Arizona Cardinals, but the Redskins came out on fire up 12-0, 11-0 last week. Kirk Cousins looks great. And you just saw the adjustments that Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator, made on Kirk Cousins and an offense. And you saw Mike McCarthy, mm-hmm. who, by the way, is calling the plays. And that was the Packer team we saw from mid-second quarter on, John, that we saw that started out 6-0 this season. So, and again, Carson Palmer's never won a playoff game. And I'm big into what goes on to a player's head. Everyone talked about Marvin Lewis and the Cincinnati Bengals, 0-6 in the playoffs, and they'll find a way to lose. And they found a way to lose. So, you know what? I'm not I was trying to figure out these playoffs, if you give me a minute here. And I always go with, and it really worked out well in the wild card round, who the better quarterback is. Let's go to Kansas City and Houston. Alex Smith over Brian Hoyer. Alex Smith. Let's go to the game that night. Ben Roethlisberger over AJ McCarron. Ben Roethlisberger, and then Russell Wilson over Teddy Bridgewater. And then in the late game that afternoon, it was Aaron Rodgers over Kirk Cousins. If you look at this game, Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback than Carson Palmer, even though Palmer's having a great season stats-wise and has John Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, great skill position players on his team. I like the Packers in an upset.
Wow. Okay. You're sticking to that.
I am.
Okay, cool. Very good. Sunday, early, Seahawks at Panthers on Fox. Marshawn Lynch could be the key in this game. I don't think we know yet if he's playing or not. Panthers D is tough, though. Seahawks, to me, they're lucky to be there after a missed field goal. But I think this is going to be a great game. I'm going to go against my overall pick of Seattle going to the Super Bowl, and I'm going to pick the rested Panthers here. Who do you got?
Same thing. I mean, I'm – this is – again, I'll say it, my moniker. No one would be shocked if the Seahawks won this game because of their history of being in the last two Super Bowls. And Russell Wilson, I think, right now – of all the quarterbacks playing in this tournament, is the best quarterback. He made a play. I mean, we maybe talk about it later in the show, in the Minnesota game last week, with a botched snap and led them to their first touchdown, and only he can make in this league. So, if the Panthers are going to lose to anybody, it's them. The Panthers get by them, I'm telling you right now, they're going to the Super Bowl. So, do I like the Panthers? Yes. I just think that there's too much there on defense for the Panthers. And let's face it. The Seahawks cannot play the kind of game they played against Minnesota. Minnesota outplayed them in that game, and we all know how that ended. So I got the Panthers.
Okay. Let's talk about that, because the heartbreaking loss for the Vikings, Blair Walsh missed that chip shot, 27-yard field goal in the final play. Just a couple of thoughts, and I'll let you jump in. First, Walsh talked to the media, and he took the blame. Didn't run off the field. He acted like a pro. I give him kudos for that. But things work in strange ways. Here's my other take on this. I go back to the Tuck rule, which, of course, you as a Raider fan killed you. That strange ruling should have ended the season for the Pats, but instead it led to their Super Bowl runs. When you look at, talk about the strange play, the bad snap, that Russell Wilson turned it into a touchdown, and then that missed field goal. Is this a chance that it could lead to a Seahawks resurgence? I mean, it just sometimes luck is just involved here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when 1986, when that ball went through Bill Buckner's legs, that was game six. Did anyone think that the Red Sox had a chance to win game seven, even though they were up 3-1 in the seventh inning? And no one realized it. They were up in 3-1 in the seventh inning of that seventh game. They still lost a game, and the Mets won the World Series. And I really believe you're onto something right here. And again, luck plays in everyone's life and just in the everyday workings of the world. Luck is a huge part of what we live with. And whether it's bad luck or good luck or no luck, this is huge for the Seahawks. And they are a team, I just mentioned it, they are playoff ready. They've been to the last two Super Bowls, so nothing can faze them. Weather, you know, the weather conditions being -6 in Minnesota, be decent with a guarantee it's not going to be -6 in Carolina. You live down there. What is the weather this supposed to be on Sunday?
Actually, it should be really good. It should be like in the 50s, high 50s, low 60s at that time. And I didn't see the forecast for rain, but I'll check on that in a little bit and let
okay,
you know.
Okay, so jumping into that one, John.
It should actually be pretty good Saturday and Sunday. Say that again.
Okay, so low 50s, early 60s compared to what they played in -6 is like going to the Bahamas for them. So that's not going to be a problem. Yeah, I think you're onto something. I think it could lead to a Seahawks resurgence. And I have a friend of mine. A friend of mine, Jeff, went to the Minnesota game last weekend. He's got a 12-year-old son. They're Minnesota fans. They live in Los Angeles, and they went to the game, what an experience to take your 12-year-old kid to his first football game. You're Minnesota fans. And he said that he walked out of that stadium and you could hear, I hate to use a cliche, you could hear a pin drop. And his son was crying. And he said the people were crying. They were just in such shock over that. I don't know if Blair Walsh will ever get looked at. I've been in NFL locker rooms before, and I'm telling you, he handled it great, and he owned up to it, and this and that. But I guarantee you there's a lot of players that are still pissed off at him. And I know Scott Norwood was never the same after he missed that field goal for the Bills, that 47-yard field goal would have won the game in the 1990 season, 91 Super Bowl. And he wasn't. And even though he was a Pro Bowl kicker, he wasn't around long. So let's keep an eye on that. Blair Walsh has never missed a field goal under 30 yards in high school. He missed one between high school, college, and the pros, and he picked the wrong time to do it. And talk about irony. You remember, let's go back to 1998. The Minnesota Vikings are 15-1. Gary Anderson is their field goal kicker. He didn't miss a field goal all year. All year, didn't miss one field goal. He was 31 out of 31, and he missed a 35-yard field goal in a dome to put the Vikings in the Super Bowl. Misses it, it goes overtime. Atlanta wins in overtime. So there's a history here with the Vikings, and it's wow. You could parallel them, John, to the four Super Bowls that the Buffalo Bills lost, because Minnesota's been in four Super Bowls and have lost them, and has had numerous chances to make Super Bowls. Losing it. I mean, let's go back to 1975. They were up by 1 point on the way to the Super Bowl, and Roger Staubach hits Drew Pearson on the Hail. Remember that famous Hail Mary to all our older listeners? They have a history of, no one talks of losing in the playoffs and heartbreakers. To ask your question, will it be a Seahawks resurgent? I really believe this, John, and I'll end my pontification on this. Whoever wins the Seattle-Carolina game is going to the Super Bowl. I'll pick that right now. Even though we'll do a show talking about the conference championship. Now, something can change. There could be a major injury. Like, for example, you know, Pittsburgh beat Cincinnati, but they had some major injuries coming out of that game. You almost wish Cincinnati would have won that game because Andy Dalton's healthy, because we're going to talk about it. But Pittsburgh's going into to Denver, very beat up. And, you know, but I still think no matter what, unless Russell Wilson, you know, decides to have sex with Sierra for the first time and miss a game, pull a, what was it? What was it? Barrett Robbins and miss, go to Tijuana. Yeah, the winner of this game goes to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. By the way, I saw her for the first time. She was singing the national anthem. Oh, my God. That woman is – if that guy's got a lot more restraint than any man on the face of the earth if he isn't – well, anyway.
Well, then you're trying to tell me that you're gonna break out the sunglasses again because here comes the pump?
Yeah, probably. I might have to, yeah. The only thing I'd say about Blair Walsh and the Minnesota Vikings is that he put them in a position to win because he kicked three field goals. And if the Minnesota offense was more prolific and had done a better job, he wouldn't have been in that position, or he shouldn't have been. The fact that they could only score three field goals, to me, that's not on your kicker. Your kicker actually got you there. And so hopefully it won't affect him.
Well, a kudos to you. You brought up a point in last week's show that, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is averaging 127, 28 yards a game passing in the last 5 weeks of the season. That doesn't win games.
Yeah.
That means you're managing.
No,
that means you're the modern-day Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson, that you're just monitoring and managing your team, and you put on Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson, 23 carries, 45 yards and a fumble. I am not a Peterson guy. I think that might be the most overrated player in the NFL, but that's a discussion for another time.
Well, and at the beginning of the season, though, we had him. We thought because he had a year off, he was going to be hot. He was going to be good. And what he's done is he's slowed down. Why? Because he's getting towards the end of his career. He's in his 30s. That's going to happen. So, and at the same time, too, you said this last year, field goals do not win Super Bowls. And they shouldn't.
No, I say all the time. I told it to my son. I said, we're watching the game, my son Max, and I said, Max, you live by the field goal and you die by the field goal. It's just when you settle for field goals. I mean, I remember the first time I saw it this year, it was a Monday night game between the Redskins and the Cowboys when the Cowboys went into the Washington and won, and Washington was up 12-0, four trips into the red zone, four times with the first and goal at the 5-yard line, and set up for field goals.
Yeah.
And I said, the Dallas Cowboys are going to win this game, and they did. You have to get field goals to win. I mean, you have to get touchdowns when you're in the red zone, and we'll see if that comes to fruition in these games coming up this weekend.
Okay, let's go to Sunday's game. Steelers at the Broncos, 4:40 Eastern, CBS. I mentioned this at the top of the show. Antonio Brown is out for the game. But even if he and Big Ben had played, I still have the Broncos winning this game soundly. Broncos defense, to me, too strong. I think Peyton can outthink, maybe not outthrow, the Steelers defense. And I think the Steelers D was actually better last week. I think they did a really good job. Still, I got the Broncos. I think this could be a romp as well. I still want to watch the game just because I think it'll be interesting to see what they're doing without Antonio Brown and with a, you know, half of a Ben Roethlisberger. Where are you on this game?
I'm exactly. I mean, you're brilliant. Brilliant, as the Guinness commercial
yes.
would say. I just, and you know what? You have family members, your father-in-law, Dave, my wife, Vicky, huge Steeler fans.
Yeah.
But you know what? Sometimes, you know, you talk about luck. Sometimes Cinderella finds a shoe, and Pittsburgh had huge luck with the Jets losing to the Bills. Huge luck last week, the way they got into that game with the penalties, and you're playing A.J. McCarron in a driving rainstorm, and I think it runs out this week. You're right. I think even if they were healthy, I think Denver's got the number one defense in the league, and as long as you've known Eric Snyder, the 20 years we've been friends, I've always said defense wins championships. And you see some great defenses in this week's play in the final eight. It's not a coincidence that most of these defenses, the eight teams, are in the top, all of them are in the top 12 in defense in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep an eye for the fans and the listeners to you know, that's why I always said, if you're defense, that being said, Pittsburgh Steelers pass defense is 30th when they're healthy. And McCarron did line him up a little bit in the driving rain. I mean, how does A.J. Green get so open in that last minute and 50 on that? To give the Bengals a lead. We all know how that game ended and what have you, but and you know what, John? I would normally say, wow, because the NFL always tries to save that last Sunday game, which is stupid. They should have made that game the early game and put the Carolina Panthers in Seattle as the 4 o'clock Eastern game, because I have no interest in this game, even though I will watch it, hoping for a miracle. No Raider fan likes the Broncos. I believe this could be a 2-3 touchdown game. I really do, in favor of the Broncos. And again, I've always emphasized, how many times have I said this to you off the record? I said, I don't know why the league doesn't invest more and open up a salary cap so they could actually sign guys that are backup quarterbacks that actually mean something. I mean, I know Matt Hasselbeck went 2-1 as a backup quarterback. I know that, A.J. McCarron played decent, but the drop-off between the starting quarterbacks and the backup quarterbacks in the NFL is monumental. You saw it last year. The Arizona Cardinals, John, get out to a 9-2 record, and they walk into the playoffs because they had such a big lead in that division with Ryan Lindley, who was horrible. He got cut after they lost in the playoffs to Carolina, a 7-19, by the way, last year, and they had no shot. I don't know why the NFL, who's so critical of their brand and the grid and the level of play, doesn't invest more in backup quarterbacks. I don't get it. You know what the backup quarterback is for the Green Bay Packers? He probably caddied for you last week. He probably It's Scott Tolzien, okay?
Scott Tolzien.
He probably caddied for you last week. Matt McGloin is the backup quarterback for the Raiders. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is a backup quarterback for Brady. He's never played. He's never started a game. It just doesn't make sense. It's like, if I give you an analogy, it's like you're a baseball guy like I am, okay? It's like you have to run your starting pitcher no matter how bad he's getting shelled for 7 innings because you have no back. All you have is a closer. I mean, it's crazy. And I know that Jeff Fisher, who's got a lot to, you know, on his mind moving to Los Angeles, but he said in the competition committee that other than look at the officiating and some other things that, you know, that they're gonna look at in the March meetings, they're gonna look at that with the ownership about there's a certain maybe a certain that we could add more money and developing more of the backup quarterbacks, because I think it's a big issue in the NFL. And you're gonna see it this weekend.
No, I think it is. I agree with you 100%, and I bet you they do something about it. But let's weigh in on the Vontaze Burfict and Pac-Man Jones antics at the end of the Steelers-Bengals game. It was a horrible display, and it's exactly what is wrong with the NFL. I'd say what's wrong with our country, win at all cost attitude, politics, and business as well. But the NFL fines Burfict $50,000 and a 3-game suspension. I'm going to take a page out of your book. If they want to end this, then fine him $500,000 and suspend him for the season. Give me your take.
You know, you're saying exactly what every single pundit and analyst has said on an NFL network and ESPN, and they don't do it. And now they have video of Vontaze Burfict that's going to be released, I think, after the playoffs, spitting on David DeCastro, who's an offensive lineman of the Steelers. And why do you have these guys? You know, the thing is you have these great players. Greg Hardy's a Pro Bowl player. Vontaze Burfict is a terrific talent. Yet they have the brains of a 10-year-old. That's suffering from Tourette syndrome and autism. I don't want to piss off anyone's out there, but their brains aren't fully developed, and I don't get how these guys are playing. And I put that on the coaching staff. How does Marvin Lewis allow this? Okay, Pac-Man Jones said if Antonio Brown doesn't play, I'm going to apologize to him. He is lying to everyone. Pac-Man Jones's credibility in his life. I mean, you want to go back to this guy's life, and we well know. I live in Las Vegas, and what happened in 2007. During the All-Star weekend here with the guy getting shot with this, it's crazy. You have a thug mentality in the NFL, and you see it on certain teams, and the only way they're going to clean it up is hit these guys in the pocket. Not even suspension. They're more worried about their pocketbooks. You're right. Mm-hmm. Find them six figures. Find them six figures. Not so much a suspension, because you know what? It's all about the money. So if they miss a game, you know, it's okay. I mean, I'm not so sure the way I watch that there's not every guy, there's a Pete Rose out there that cares about winning, not the Pete Rose after he got out of baseball, but the Pete Rose when he played, that it's all about winning. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure about some of these guys, because what I witnessed in that game, Phil Simms said it great. Phil Simms called that game with Jim Nance, the Steelers and the Bengals, and he said, "This is sad. I don't believe I played in the league like this." Okay? Mm-hmm. And why is it? Is it, you know, John, you're so, and this is serious, you're so big on politics, And you're affluent on society and social media and just the technology, how things have come. And you and I have lived. We grew up in the 70s and 80s. Is this indicative of our society that we have players like this? Because we had players that were tough guys in the 70s and 80s. But it wasn't that thug gang mentality that we see in we're seeing in the NFL right now. That it's all about, when I hear guys say street cred, what the hell does that mean? Who gives a crap? Mm-hmm. You know, Aaron Hernandez claimed he was a gang member when he was in the NFL. There's talks about Deshaun Jackson that Chip Kelly said, you know, he's affiliated with gangs, they're doing gang signs. You know, is that what it is? That, and I'm always about this. I'm always about the guy. I know Charles Barkley, the great NBA player, said we're not supposed to be role models. But guess what? When you sign that contract, you are a role model. And my whole thing is about teaching sportsmanship to kids, because kids emulate what these pro guys do. Okay? And look, the hit on the Vontaze Burfict hit, which he claims. You know, I could strangle Deion Sanders. I saw him say it was a legal hit. It wasn't a legal hit. I heard Mike Pereira, who's a Fox officiating analyst, say same thing. He goes, Deion Sanders is dead wrong. That was a vicious hit on a. You got to protect these players. So I'm hot on this whole thing, because I think when you have players on your team that perform those kind of acts and cost you a game. It has to be going. This is where I'm going with this. It has to be going. It has to go beyond the fact that they're so talented. You got to cut these guys and get them out of the league. Sorry, you know you have 256 kids are going to be drafted in 3 months. A lot of guys that have a lot of talent are going to come into this league, and you have so many great players in this league that are such great role models on defense. You got, I mean, geez, I mean, there's so many guys that you could hang your hat on and say, but then look, and I hate to say it, I mean, we talked about this. Look at the third most bought jersey this year in the National Football League is Johnny Manziel. What does that tell you? What did Johnny Manziel do to earn being the third? That means he's got more jerseys sold than every other player in the NFL except Tom Brady and Russell Wilson, who are great guys. Okay, I get that. But what is Johnny – who's buying Johnny Manziel's jersey? Your wife's a Browns fan. Has you ever thought about buying a Manziel's jersey? No. So to give you my political spat on this, I think the NFL has got to do something big. And they're going to, I guarantee they will. Like I said, they're protective of the grid. This past season, but the season that was 2014 was probably the worst season in the history of the NFL public relations wise with the Ray Rice incident and Adrian Peterson. And you're heading down that path again if you don't cut this out. And it happened with Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman, that I heard Beckham say street cred. Where are you coming from? You're in the National Football League. You're not a gang member anymore. If you ever were, you shouldn't have any affiliation with gangs. I just don't get it. You could tell I'm passionate about this.
Well, and I hear you. Let me push back just a little bit on that, because, you know, we had guys like Nitschke, Butkus, Chuck Bednarik, and I'm going back to the 50s and 60s and 70s. Mike Ciani, who played with me in a number of celebrity golf events, wide receiver for your Raiders, and he told me that, you know, Butkus would tell him, hey, you come over the middle, guess what? You're going to pay for it. And he goes, it was pretty scary. So you had that back there. The stuff about, you know, and a lot of this, you know, we keep adding this to what we call the ghetto culture. To me, it's the American culture. You know, so I just don't think you can blame it on the ghetto culture, the black society. It's not that. You know, what Burfict did, along with what Norman of the Panthers did and Beckham of the Giants did a few weeks ago, it's exactly what Wall Street, the banking industry, the Catholic Church, the NCAA, the two political parties that we have that create a culture of bribing lawmakers and making it look legal. It's exactly what they've done. The ends justify the means in America. Win at any cost for yourself. Really good book, Thomas Sowell. He wrote a book called Black Rednecks and White Liberals. Now, Sowell is he's a conservative writer, an intellectual. He's also black. Now, his theory is that the so-called ghetto culture was learned by Southern blacks in the 19th century from the Scots and the Irish who came over here from Europe. The stereotypical traits, you know them because you attribute them to me, laziness, drunkenness, or addictions, looking for community handouts, and womanizing. This is part of our culture. White culture does it quietly and then openly scoffs at black culture when they do it. So I think this is really more an American phenomena that just comes down. It permeates. Big business is involved in the NFL. Win at any cost. Look at the amount of money that's out there. Let's hide as much as we can what Ray Rice did to his wife. Oh, all of a sudden, now that it came out, yeah, okay, Ray Rice is no longer a player. I think it's American culture. And I think that's one thing that I think it's great that that the announcers called them out on this. I think it's great that the public is asking for more. I don't know if it's going to change, but I think the things you and I are talking about as hitting them in the pocketbook, that's really what counts. That's really what they're talking about. So that's kind of where I sit on the whole thing. Let me ask you this. Antonio Brown is out. Should we expect Pac-Man Jones to make a public apology?
Yes. He was on Inside the NFL with Brandon Marshall, and he said it. He said it this week. He said, I will make a public apology, and he will, because, you know, hopefully he's a stand-up guy. And we'll do that. And I wasn't intimating that it's just black, but 79% of the NFL is black. So, and these incidents have happened with that, you know, with those guys. It can happen. Oh my God, I remember years ago. Remember Bill Romanowski spitting on J.J. Stokes and Richie Incognito being there's a lot of white thugs in the league, but when eight out of 10 of the players are black, there's more of a happenstance that's going to happen. I love what you just said, and that it's American culture, and you brought up, and I can go one step further. You reviewed the movie Concussion, and I haven't seen it, but I bet a lot of it is the NFL trying to hide what's really going on with these players, because the league is so successful. And again, marketing-wise, you have guys on a radio show, you and I talking about this. And everyone's talking. There wasn't a person on the planet that had a radio show or a TV show talking about the NFL last week that wasn't talking about the Vontaze Perfect hit and the Pac-Man Jones penalty and not talking about the game. Because it was about what happened that led to that final field goal. And it was controversial. And the NFL loves that. Deep down, the NFL marketing guys love that. You know, and you know what? Here's my last thing I'll say on it. I wouldn't be shocked, and I hate to say this because this sounds horrible, but I wouldn't be shocked if Vontaze Perfect jersey number 55 is a leading seller coming up in the offseason.
Wow. Yeah, we should watch that. Yeah, no doubt about that. Okay. This won't be the last one because I got a couple other questions for you I want to hit you with. We criticized the refs a lot. Were you okay with the refs ruling that led to that game-winning field goal in that game? I mean, Joey Porter, he's been fined for being on the field. Are you okay with the way the refs handled this?
Yes. I mean, you know, it's always the last guy. The refs, you see Pac-Man Jones throwing a punch at Joey Porter. That's what the referee saw. Joey Porter never threw a punch at Pac-Man Jones. I'm definitely okay with the pep. Deion Sanders isn't, and I'll debate him anytime he wants to come on our show, but I'm definitely okay with the Vontaze Perfect penalty, which would have been a 50-yard field goal if Pac-Man Jones didn't get penalized. But, yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with the way the refs handled that situation. But, again, I think it got too far out of hand with the before the game they were taunting each other. And then look at the Cincinnati fans. Ben Roethlisberger's car up the field and they're throwing things at him, bottle waters that were full of water and it's cold. And that's a heated rivalry. And the officials, like in the Giant-Carolina game, let it go too far. But to answer your question, I'm happy with the way the refs handled that situation leading up to the field goal, but I'm not happy with the refs with the way the refs handled the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. One other thing, because I hear a lot of people talking about this. I thought that Burfict's hit on Big Ben that caused that shoulder injury was actually, I thought that was a clean hit. I don't have a problem with that. You agree?
Absolutely. Clean hit.
Okay. All right, cool. We are talking with our expert, Eric Schneider, author of a book on the Raiders and Raider Nation. He's also on the Power Hour on 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at John Daly Sports. If you want to drop us a question, do it on Twitter at John Daly Sports. Hopefully around 11:30 a.m. We will Eastern Time, we will take your phone calls. The number to call, 347-426-3484, 347-426-3484. So many intriguing storylines with the coaching choices. First, Hugh Jackson is now in Cleveland. He could have gone to a number of teams. Biggest story out of this, though, the end of the Johnny Manziel era. What are you hearing?
Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis have been friends for 35 years. Marvin Lewis gave Hugh Jackson a job as a quality control coach when the Raiders fired him after the 2011 season. Hugh couldn't get a job in the league because it didn't end like everyone thought it did. Hugh had a lot of acrimony with the Raiders, but it led to the fact that a lot of players, when Hugh Jackson did press conferences, he blamed the players for losing. You could never do that. And they knew, you know what, this guy's not ready. Now, he built his way back into a head coaching job. Great offensive coordinator. He's a great teacher. The problem I have here is he went out last week on Fox Sports Radio. I'll give myself a plug. And said, there's a lot of jobs I'm interested in. I'm not interested in the Browns because I don't want to have to play my best friend two times, who's helped me out so much two times a year. Well, Jimmy Haslam came in and offered him over $5 million a year. Jimmy Haslam did not attend the owner's meeting last week. The only owner. Because he stayed back. He wanted Hugh Jackson. And he got him. And so, to me, it's a red flag. It says Hugh Jackson, you're getting with the Raiders. He'll win some games, but he's a loose cannon. I like the fact that he walked in and said to Jimmy Haslam, look, I'll take this job, but we're moving on from Johnny Manziel. And every mock draft I've seen, including Eric Schneider, the Browns are the number two pick, and your wife's going to love this. Jared Goff, quarterback out of Cal.
UCLA. Oh, Cal.
He's in the same class as any great number one pick as a Winston and a Mariota. He's a great, great quarterback. We'll talk about it later. I like Paxton Lynch out of Memphis, and the kid went out of North Dakota State. There's three quarterbacks that are going to go in the first round, I think, but I think Goff's going to the Browns. That being said, what happens to Johnny Manziel? I mean, are the Cowboys that stupid? Tony Romo said, I'm healthy enough to play there 3 or 4 years. So does Johnny Manziel want to sit on the bench? It's okay to sit behind the bench, behind a Josh McCown and a Brian Hoyer and want to play and be a baby about it. But Tony Romo's a perennial Pro Bowl player who, if he doesn't get his clavicle broken, is going to throw 35 touchdowns a year. So, you know what? I wouldn't be shocked if this is the end of Johnny Manziel.
Okay. All right. I agree with you on that. Here's some of the other moves. Dolphins have Adam Gase, the Bears offensive coordinator, the youngest head coach ever. The Giants named offensive coordinator Ben McAdoo as their head coach, also very young. Dirk Cutter, best name in football right now, was the Bucs offensive coordinator, now their head coach. I love this choice. Doug Peterson going to the Eagles after playing for the Eagles and also offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. Of course, this hasn't been announced yet until the Chiefs season ends. And I actually like Chip Kelly going to the 49ers with Kaepernick. Is it a coincidence they're all offensive-minded coaches?
No, but I think there's something I like to look at with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New York Giants. You fire Lovie Smith and you push Tom Coughlin out, because I think those organizations thought that Ben McAdoo, who was pursued by the Eagles big time, and Dirk Cutter were going to get other jobs. So instead of just, sweetening the pot with more money, they actually got rid of their head coaches. And I know Coughlin wasn't happy getting out of there. I know Coughlin was on the short list with the Eagles also and withdrew his name because the Eagles, Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie, they're one of the few organizations like the Cowboys that could pick your off that picks your coach. That's why Chip Kelly had such autonomy with that team, is he didn't want people picking their coaches. Al Davis does it, Jerry Jones does it, Dan Snyder does it. And usually when you become a head coach, you pick your coaches, you pick your OC, you pick your DC, defensive coordinator, and down the line. So I think there's going to be some limitations with Doug Peterson there. I like all the hires, but the one that really intrigues me and the one I like the best is Chip Kelly, because I'm not done with Colin Kaepernick. I mean, this guy threw for 1,600 yards, 8 touchdowns, 5 picks. Last year, 24 touchdowns, 12 picks, and just a quagmire of the dysfunction with the great coach Jim Harbaugh. And the 2 years previous, he went to the Pro Bowl. I'm not ready to give up on this guy. I saw that guy. I live in Vegas. I saw him when he was with Nevada Reno coming to the Silver Bowl here, Sam Boyd Stadium, and threw 5 touchdowns in their first half. And I said to my son, this guy's an NFL quarterback. And the other guy I was with, one of my buddies, like, come on, man, he plays at Reno. Well, I think Chip Kelly is going to do wonders for him. I think when Chip Kelly did not have player personnel control and turned into this maniacal, dictator, he was 10-6 and 10-6 in the Philadelphia Eagles when he just had it. Can you imagine Kaepernick running that offense? He's more of an athletic quarterback than Nick Foles or Sam Bradford. So I think the 49ers are the one team of all these teams out there that can make a nice bounce back. Jameis Winston, great rookie year, up for rookie of the year. He benefits because he's going to have to keep the same system. What kills a quarterback is when you change, we have to change coordinators every year. So Jameis Winston's going to have the same offense. Those are the two winners, are Tampa Bay and San Francisco.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know we had talked about before, if Chip Kelly's going to go anywhere, he should go to Tennessee or he should go to the 49ers. And we were a little concerned because we heard that Chip Kelly, when he went and spoke to the 49ers, it was an hour meeting and then he was out of there. Obviously, it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to hire him. Wouldn't you agree?
My sources told me, John, and I was completely wrong. It was a 42-minute meeting. And I guess I took it as it went bad. It went great. He walked in and he had a folder printed out from like a king. He had a folder, a business folder of his regimen of what he's going to do with the team. Kaepernick, meeting with Kaepernick, and if he gets a job in the coming weeks, get him on a system to learn it, and off-season workouts. And he blew Trent Baalke and Jed York away, blew him away with the way he came prepared for that interview. Chip Kelly, when he interviewed for Oregon, he was interviewed for 46 minutes, got the job. With Philadelphia, with Jeff Lurie and their hierarchy there, he interviewed for half an hour, got the job. So you know what? Well, let's see how this works out. Doug Peterson's great for Philadelphia. He's played the position. He look at this offense with Alex Smith. Alex Smith is the only quarterback in the playoffs right now that kind of mirrors the same kind of body language and physique and skill set that Sam Bradford has. Alex Smith is a better quarterback right now. I'm not saying I just don't think Sam Bradford was a fit for the Chip Kelly offense, and that cost Chip Kelly his job.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. All right, interesting. Just hearing Ben McAdoo's first news conference with the media kind of goes into what you're saying. He says right now his staff is fluid. What's going to happen with Steve Spagnuolo?
He's staying. And you read the blogs, read Ralph Facciano, Mike Garofalo, people I know that are just my brother-in-law, diehard Giant fans, are pissed off. Why would you get rid of Coughlin? You know, which leads me to believe that the reason why I got rid of Coughlin is that Coughlin had all the decisions in the clutch. You're a Giants fan, and the Giants blew more games in the fourth quarter with bad clock management than any team in the history of the NFL last season. And that's on Coughlin, because if it was McAdoo that was making those calls, then he wouldn't get the job. I'm a little bad. I like it because I know that, and what I really like is they're moving Mike Sullivan up to their quarterbacks coach, is now their OC. They brought Joe Philbin in, the ex-Miami Dolphins coach, listeners, yep, as a quarterbacks coach. And this guy, when he was the offensive coordinator of the Packers, their offense was never less than 3 in the league, and they won the Super Bowl. So that's going to help out also, because the Dolphins with Ryan Tannehill runs the same offense as the Giants do. So I think offensively they'll be fine, but the defense was horrible last year. They had injuries. So this is on Jerry Reese, the general manager of the Giants. You have $42 million under the salary cap. You have a 10th pick in the draft. I haven't taken Miles Jack, who is a great linebacking prospect out of UCLA. If the Giants get their defense going, that you know, look, you have a new coach in Doug Peterson. The Redskins are the Redskins. You know, Kirk Cousins isn't committed to going back there. He said, I'm going to test the market. I think they franchise him. And then you got the Cowboys. You know, who knows what they're going to do with their drama. So that division's winnable right now for the Eagles or the Giants, even though they both have new hires. And I don't think that Ben McAdoo is really a new hire. I think that the Giant players are going to come in and they're not going to know, you know, other than having the leadership of Tom Coughlin. We'll see. I don't know what to make of this Ben McAdoo thing. I'm more excited about Dirk Cutter, who's been a head coach at Boise State and Arizona State, taking over for Tampa and watching the maturation of Jameis Winston.
All right. We mentioned at the top of the show the Lions are keeping Jim Caldwell for 2016. To me, it makes sense considering the way the Lions ended the season. Still, interesting that they're sticking with him and not pulling the plug like other teams. What are you hearing?
He's got a wonderful influence in the locker room. He's more of a father figure. And this is a guy that Al Davis, the late Raider owner, and Jim Caldwell, when he didn't have a job or a dime to his name, called Al Davis. They met when Al Davis was at a coaching clinic for young coaches. And Al Davis gave an internship with the Raiders. And what Al Davis noticed was the leadership. And I'm pretty sure that if Jim Caldwell didn't have a job with the Colts, he would have been the Raider coach other than Dennis Allen. Because the leadership quality this man has, he's an intelligent guy. But what you see, if you watch him, he's a stoic figure. You never see this guy change expression. But players play hard for him, and you saw that. I mean, the Lions started 0-5 and finished 7-9, and he really started playing good football. The problem the Lions are going to have is I think that Calvin Johnson, a.k.a. Megatron, is serious about retiring. He's got he's got a ton of investments in donut shops. He's done very well in the business world. He's 30 years old. He's had 4 concussions. And look, everyone was shocked when Patrick Willis walked around. Patrick Willis is 27 years old, 4-time Pro Bowler, walked away from the game. You saw the movie Concussion. I didn't. You saw what these concussions do to people, you know, and he said he's walking, and he forgot his kid's name. You know, so you know, just don't the listener and the fan can't look at his, oh, they got years left in this league. They don't if their head's not right. So that's the bigger story in Detroit is, and he'll make his announcement. He's a class guy and he's respectful to the team, and he'll make his announcement obviously before the combine or when free agency starts, or let the Lions. But I think that's a serious thing to look at with the Lions is whether or not Calvin Johnson retires.
All right, the remaining coaching question seems to be the Titans. New GM John Robinson comes from the Patriots, so there's talk that the Pats offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels is going there. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing Josh McDaniels. I'm thinking Mike Mularkey is going back for a second interview. I don't know what they see in this guy. He fell with the Bills. Good guy. He looks like a poor man's version physically of Kevin Costner, if you look at his face. But, you know, he's no tin cup. And he's no Field of Dreams. He's a good guy, good offensive mind. But I really believe Mike Mularkey's in the same realm as a Buddy Ryan, Norv Turner, Joe Philbin. Great coordinators, lousy head coaches. And I don't know if this is the guy to really bring on the maturation of a good rookie season, even though his injury plagued in Marcus Mariota. Let me say another coaching move happened I thought was interesting real quick. Ken Whisenhunt was signed as the offensive coordinator back with the Chargers. He was with them. The Chargers offense under him, another great offensive coordinator, lousy head coach.
Yep.
Even though they get the Cardinals to the Super Bowl one year, he has a horrible record as a head coach other than that one year. I don't know if it was an aberration or what. But the Chargers offense, for Charger fans, when he was offensive coordinator, was in the top five. And that's why Frank Reich, everyone remembers Frank Reich is orchestrating that Buffalo victory over Houston in the playoffs. Their offense went in the 20s. So that's a good move for Charger fans. So in other words, there's other coaching moves made that I think that are interesting. I think Joe Philbin's going to help the Giants, ex-head coach. I think Wisenhunt going back to the Chargers as an OC, terrific. So, you know, sometimes the little things that happen with coaching staff. Titans are looking at Mularkey. They're looking at Josh McDaniels. They're also looking at Sean McDermott, big name, defensive coordinator of your Carolina Panthers down there. And he's been lost in this because he can't interview until the Panthers are basically out of the playoffs or that window of a Sunday night of the game. And I think teams just wanted to move on. But if the Panthers lose or if they win, I wouldn't be shocked if there's a delegation of Titan brass meeting him to interview him. Keep those three names alive. Mike Mularkey, Sean McDermott, Josh McDaniel.
All right, folks, we're going to open up the phone lines. Tell us what you're thinking about the games this week. Tell us what you think we've said. The number to call is 347-426-3484, 347-426-3484. If you want, you can also tweet me your question at John Daly Sports. That's on Twitter. So far, we don't have any phone callers coming in, but let me ask you this. Lovie Smith, Tom Coughlin, are they done now, or is the coaching fraternity so good in such kind of a closed market that these guys are going to get jobs maybe Lovie Smith, though, as like coordinators as opposed to being head coaches, or are they done as head coaches?
I think Lovie Smith, believe it or not, is more done. I think when you fail twice in the NFL as a head coach, and Lovie Smith failed with the Bears. I mean, that was last year going 2-14 with the Buccaneers, 2 years ago. And you okay?
Hold on. I don't know what's going on. Hang on.
Is there an alien in your being abducted, John?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hang on. Just wait. But let it go. Can you hear me okay?
Is that your version of what you do to get yourself a black eye?
Yeah, actually, it really worked. I feel so much better now. Obviously, some problems
technical
with
difficult.
The
technical
difficulties here. Anyway, so you were saying about Lovie Smith and Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, I think Lovie Smith's done. Once you fail twice in the NFL as a head coach, Tom Coughlin was asked to resign. I think he would have gotten fired. I think age sometimes is the difference. I'll tell you what. It was really close between Chip Kelly and Mike Shanahan, a guy, well, you know, there's a guy in his early 60s that's lost out on jobs at the last minute. So he's out there in the circus still trying to get a job. But I don't know if we're going young. You said Adam Gase is 37, Ben McAdoo's young, Dirk Cutter's is a young guy, Doug Peterson's in his mid-40s. The league goes young. I mean, Mike Thomas started out, he was young. John Gruden, I don't know if that's more of the trend we're going to see with younger coaches. I personally think Tom Coughlin and Lovie Smith are done. And again, you know, Lovie Smith doesn't have the kind of personality to be in a TV booth. But I guarantee you, Tom Coughlin, if his wife Judy throws him out because they said he can't sit still, be sure he'll be on one of the sets in a pregame show or doing analyzation. I said this last week, I think, to you. I said it on the Power Hour. Charles Woodson and Tom Coughlin will be the two guys, the new guys you see in suits, talking about the NFL next season.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Oh, no phone calls coming in, so we can wrap things up here. Just to go over, I have the Pats, Broncos, Panthers, and Cards, all home favorites. You actually have two upsets. Go over your upsets.
I have the Chiefs. I have the Packers. You know, and I just think that. But like I said, you're talking about a Chiefs team right now that the defense is so terrific right now, causing turnovers every game. And you gotta remember, they're on an 11-game winning streak, but they won a lot of those games without Tom Bahaly or Junior Houston. Okay? Justin Houston, I'm sorry. And these are two Pro Bowl guys in your defensive line. Not many teams could have that happen to them and survive. And then they lose Jamaal Charles, top five running back in the league in week two. So,
Yeah.
Timmy Ware, Chakandrick West, the guy stepping up. Now, I didn't mention this. If Jeremy Maclin doesn't play and he got injured last week in the game, I heard he is going to play. But if he doesn't play, that is a huge blow to the Chiefs offense
Yeah,
because
right now,
he's
game
had
time
a Pro
decision.
Bowl game time. Whenever I hear game time decision, that usually means no. I've learned that in my covering the NFL. So, and the same with Ben Roethlisberger. So, but it'd be interesting to see that. That gets us going tomorrow. We start off with that. Then we got Green Bay, Arizona, Saturday night. Then you got the Panthers and the Seahawks, which I wish the NFL would do us all a favor and put that as the afternoon game, so we go into our depression of not having any more, only 3 games left after Sunday afternoon. That we could, I just don't think the Steelers and the Broncos are going to provide any drama for us. I don't. I
Well,
think
and you don't
I
have to
just
record
I.
60 minutes, though. I mean, that's the other good thing. So, just a quick update here. I did check the weather. 52 degrees and no rain for the
Yeah.
Charlotte area for Sunday. So that game should be fast track. Shouldn't be any impediments in the way, and it certainly will not look like Minnesota.
Perfect
All
football
right,
weather.
brother.
So, and I will wrap it up by saying one other thing. I do think, and I don't, unless there's a major injury, and we saw that happen with Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Two things I want to wrap it up with. One, if you give me time, I think winner of Seattle. I'll repeat myself. Seattle, Carolina goes to the Super Bowl in the NFC. I think the winner of the KC New England game goes to the Super Bowl in the AFC. I think either one of those teams will go into Denver and beat them. Okay. That being said, and I also want to say that we didn't talk about it much, but I have a big pulse on the LA issue right now. There's no way the Chargers don't take this deal. They have to be idiots not to take the deal with the $100 million, and there's just no way they give up that LA market. When you see the designs of what this new stadium is, and theater and mall and the money. Did you know, John, that the Rams, you cannot go to any sports gear memorabilia store in the United States and have a 3-month wait? I went to Sideline Sports, which is a local place here in Las Vegas. My son used to work there when he was a kid in high school, okay? It's a 3-month back order on Los Angeles Rams gear. The league gets that money along with the Rams. The Chargers could use that money just for merchandising, And you still with me, John?
I'm still with you.
Check this out.
Can you hear me?
Qualcomm Stadium, yeah. I believe the drive from the Inglewood, everyone knows Inglewood's in the south part of LA, the 405. It's about 92 miles from San Diego. There's people that live in parts of Pennsylvania that drive more than to go to Steeler games, or people live in parts of North Carolina that drive more than to go to a Panthers game. So that being said, if you're a diehard San Diego fan, this move isn't the worst thing on the planet for you. When you move from Cleveland to Baltimore, you can't drive there in 2 hours, okay? When you move from the Indianapolis Colts I'm sorry, from Baltimore to Indianapolis, you can't drive there in 2 hours. When you're St. Louis Cardinals you move to Arizona, you can't drive there in 2 hours. So there's no way, and I'll go on record, and I'll say this undeniable. If the San Diego Chargers balk at this move, the Oakland Raiders will jump on it, and the LA Raiders will be the second tenant in that stadium. Mark that down. Print it. Okay.
Got it. Now, you got to also remember that I may be a good show host. I'm a horrible show producer because I teased the relocation and we didn't even talk about it, and I was going to wrap things up. Let's get into this
Well,
a little bit more, because I think one of the things is, and we can talk about LA fans. I actually think the Chargers should stay down there because I think the community is going to rally around them. I think two teams in one stadium that's owned by one of the other teams is not going to work out. And you've said this before, the LA fans are not good fans. And I think this move, I think the Rams going there, that's fine. If they both go there, I think it's going to be a disaster for the NFL.
Absolutely. I think either one. I mean, the Raiders actually have probably more of a following. The Rams are obviously going to show up, and there'll be a honeymoon period. I mean, look, let's look. This is the big gamble. The Rams have to play in the L.A. Coliseum, horrible venue, bad part of town, a lot of history, for 3 years. Let's say they stink for three. They're 4-12. You can't build momentum going into a new stadium. I just know the L. I grew up there. I know the L.A. sports fan. They are very, very fickle. Look at the attendance at Laker games. 30 years of winning seasons. You have two lousy years, I know that it looks like the place is full, but trust me, there's a lot of empty seats up there in the rafters. It's going to happen in L.A. Number two, I want you to watch this story unveil. And right now as we speak, Mark Davis is meeting with Henry Cisneros, the mayor of San Antonio, and Red McCombs, who is one of the biggest boosters of the University of Texas, big San Antonio native. There's a lot of money in West Texas. The Alamo Dome is ready to go, and there's 12 different – Red McCombs has given 12 different ways they will build them a new stadium and not cost the taxpayers any money. He's one of the richest guys on the planet. You may know his name as a past owner of the San Antonio Spurs, but do not put this thing to rest if the Raiders might not move to San Antonio. I personally don't care where the Raiders play. I think the stadium in Oakland, the acoustics are great, but it's a baseball stadium, and it's built in 1966. It has to go. Same with Qualcomm. You just don't have the amenities there. So there's the great thing is L.A. gets a football team. The Rams had 49 years there before. They're going back. It'll be fine. I totally agree with you that one team – should be the only team in Los Angeles. I mean, look, when the Rams and the Raiders were there, they were both good. The Rams went to the playoffs with John Robinson when they played in Anaheim. And Eric Dickerson, he played there. And the Raiders won a Super Bowl. But they both averaged 50, 60,000 fans a game. It's just, and even back then in the 80s when the economy was better, it just wasn't enough. It's just not the type of, and San Diego should know this better. San Diego had a hard time. See, San Diego burned bridges. That's the problem Dean Spanos did. They acted all year like they were moving, and you saw it in their attendance and the fact that other teams had more people in the stadium than they did. We talked about that all season. The Raiders didn't burn bridges. I went to a few Raider games this year. It was sold out. The Raiders never acted like they were moving. They played this thing marketing-wise great. That being said, I think if anything happens, the Chargers take this deal and move up there because they burned bridges in San Diego. There's nowhere to really build them a stadium. They said there's room down in Chula Vista or in Mission Valley. I don't think it's going to happen. But that doesn't mean the Raiders necessarily stay in Oakland. They don't have a lease at the O.co. And I think Mark Davis will say, you know what? And, John, I lived there. I went to the University of Texas, which is 72 miles away from San Antonio. Okay, there are, other than the state of Ohio where your wife is from and parts of Pennsylvania, there is no rabid fan base in West Texas football fans. People could Redbox it or just go on, you know, try and get on demand two movies, Varsity Blues and Friday Night Lights, true stories about what life is like in West Texas. And they get a football team down in San Antonio, and that's the fifth, I think you're going to talk about it. It's one of the fifth fastest growing markets in America. And the Major League Baseball is looking to expand there eventually. The Spurs are just, they're phenomenal, they're a phenomenon. And I'm not lobbying for it. I think the Raiders, if you ask me personally, I think the Raiders belong in Oakland. They're the Oakland Raiders. But if they went to San Antonio, it's still the Raiders. And the bottom line is these teams deserve new stadiums. And Atlanta's building one. Atlanta's going to have a new stadium in 2 years. Minnesota moves into their new venue. The Rams, obviously, are going to have a new stadium in 2019. And then you're going to have two stadiums in San Diego and Oakland that were built in 1966. You just can't do anything to them. It's just the Raiders are really in bad shape because they share it with the A's, and the Oakland made a 10-year extension with the A's, which makes sense. The A's average 25,000 fans a game times 81. John, you're making more money, but everyone knows marketing wise, the Raiders making more money from in their 8 home games from people flying in and what have you. So it's more, baseball is more regional. I know I've talked forever on this thing. If the bottom line is, I think San Diego jumps in the deal and moves in with L.A., I think it's a bad move, but I think financially, in the short term, I think it'll work out. And I'm not so sure the Raiders stay in Oakland.
What are the odds?
Raiders stay in Oakland? 50-50. And here's the 50-50. I think if the Chargers balk at this, and it's going to happen soon, don't be shocked. Here's breaking news for you from Eric Snyder. The Chargers right now are negotiating behind doors with Stan Kroenke's team to get this done this year. The Chargers don't want to play in San Diego in the year 2016. So I know they want. I know they want to. They want some kind of answer. They give them a year window. They don't want. The league knows that they really can't go back to San Diego. How do you market that? Oh, we want to leave. We're saying we're leaving. We had a big going away thing. They were so certain, Davis and Spanos, not being the geniuses that they are. They're not members of Mensa, that the league was actually going to go for the Carson project, okay? And you know what? The committee that's formed, the NFL had a committee of Mara, Rooney, Robert Kraft, Tisch, Clark Hunt, and there was another owner, Bob McNair of the Houston Texans. They voted 5-1 in favor of the Carson project. You were trending that on your Facebook page and what have you. The only dissenting vote was Clark Hunt. The Hunt family will do nothing to help the Raiders out. They hate them from the Al Davis days. Another story. So the Carson project was originally, oh my God, the breaking news, the NFL owners are going to approve it. The NFL owners went the other way because Jerry Jones had enough people saying, look at this whole thing, and we're going to move our NFL network. They're building, you know what they're doing in Inglewood, and you're familiar with the LA area. You got a minute for this? We have time?
No, go for it.
They're building studios. The NFL Network is going to be adjacent to the stadium. They're building a mall. They're going to revitalize an area. You know, the area where Hollywood Park is and the Forum sits is not a great part of Los Angeles demographic wise. It's not a revitalized economic. It's not a Beverly Hills or a Brentwood or even a West LA Santa Monica type area. It's depressed. Well, what's going in there with theaters? A shopping center, movies. I'm talking about studios, and then of course a stadium and restaurants. 22 restaurants going in. Think about what it's going to do for that area. It just that blew Stan Kroenke's presentation blew those owners away. Carson got put to bed. Mark Davis and Dean Spanos are pissed off at the world, and they got to go back to it. Now Dean Spanos has got to do some big spin control on his public relations and go back to San Diego and try and get this thing going, and he can't. He knows he can't. Davis isn't a
how
better
long
Davis could sign. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how long before the Chargers have to make a decision? I mean, they've got to do it pretty quickly.
I bet you they make it.
I
bet you they make it the week after the Super Bowl. They'll let, the league has, look, let's just focus on the playoffs right now. This is our time of the year. We're down to the final eight. We've got the championship games next week. Then we'll focus on who's going in the week after that. They focus on who's going to the Hall of Fame and the Pro Bowl festivities in Hawaii. Then we got the big game February 7th, I believe. And then I think after that, they're going to announce it because the Chargers have to move. Now, it's easier for the Chargers to move up. They already said the Chargers will hold their – if the Chargers move to L.A., they could hold all their off-season activities still in San Diego with their workout facilities. Their workout facilities are different than – it's not attached to the stadium. So they could do like that. It's, the Rams are really – the Rams have to – that move is going to be a bigger move. They got to get workout facilities. They got to get offices and stuff like that. The move from San – when the Raiders moved to Los Angeles in 1982 – they kept their offices and everything up in Oakland, and they flew down to games. They practiced in Oakland. They did everything in Oakland and flew down to games. That was a strike year of '82. They went 8-1. They didn't lose one home game. They lost in the playoffs, but they didn't lose one home game. So it wasn't a distraction. Oakland to LA is a little bit longer flight than San Diego to LA. So the Chargers move won't be as stressful as. But you want to get the season tickets going. You want to get the thing about okay, the home dates and stuff like that. You know, it's funny. Real quick, I was so excited because I have so many members of my family that are from New York, and the Giants are playing the Rams when the schedule came out. Well, the Giants at St. Louis Rams, and now it's the Giants at Los Angeles Rams. That's the one damn game that's being played in London. It's a Rams home game that's being played in London. So I was going to go to L.A. and watch the Giants play. Now, John, you're a millionaire. If you could just get me, we should. You got to have some connections. We get to London, can't we?
Well, I've got the Queen on. In fact, she listens to the show here, and so I'm going to talk to her later. Now that she's heard what you've said, I'm sure we can find a seat at Wembley. Yes.
Nice, beautiful. Huh? Yeah. Teas and crumpets and for the Giants and the Rams, then, lad.
Yes. Yes.
So I pontificated enough, but I don't. You know, you didn't. I don't think in the beginning of the show that you did tease. About the LA situation,
I did tease
with it.
No, I did so at the beginning of the show. It shows you what a dope I am because I did. At the top of the show, I said Plus, LA has the Rams, maybe the Chargers. We'll give you the latest. You'll hear our takes on the big moves. So I completely forgot to put it in the rest of the rundown of the show. So well, I'm a dope.
Well, I know why you did. You bumped it to talk about your pump. Which, by the way,
that was
Tom,
the problem.
I couldn't
see because of my black eye.
Well, let me tell you this, too. When we were talking about during the time of the show, we were talking about Hugh Jackson and his friendship with Marvin Lewis and some of the coaching changes, I took a beautiful dump.
Did you again?
I did. It was great. And I even flushed the toilet, and you didn't hear it. Okay?
Wow.
It was just a wonderful constitution for people that of our age in the 50s, that just, you know, that yeah, exactly. It was, and the fact that I could pull that off on national radio with you're providing the sound effects. I didn't.
I don't know. I think I'm going back. I think I'm hearing him now. So,
yeah. All right, I buddy. Will say this, on a serious note. I wouldn't mind being a member of Bronco Nation if Landry Jones goes in there and beats them. That might be one of the biggest upsets in playoff history. So we'll see. This is why they play the game. This is why we love the sport so much, and we're down to the Final Four. But, John, look at the drama. Look what happened in the NFL from the time on Sunday afternoon when the Green Bay Packers, that final gun, beat the Washington Redskins 35-17. You had five coaches hired and a monumental move of team relocating, and it's going to get there'll be more. I mean, look, I've never seen. Usually NFL coaches could take 3 to 4 weeks. You had seven teams needed coaches, and only one team is available right now. Unless something happens in the final, I don't see any of these final eight coaches going anywhere. So the Titans will probably be the only job open down the road, and you're right. We said Sean McDermott, Mike Mularkey, and Josh McDaniels. So the drama of this league is just it's say what you want, and I know it's 9 months in between games if your team is eliminated from the playoffs, but the drama makes it really it's year round.
Well, and it's not only a year round league, but it's also a league making a lot of money, and as a result of a lot of money, because there's a lot more money to be had out there. You need teams preparing year-round. So even though we don't see the games year-round, exactly what you said last week, these coaching spots are going to be filled right away because they need to get into those offices and get ready for the combine, leading to the draft, leading to what's going to be happening during the summer. So it makes a ton of sense, and it also makes it good for bozos like you and me who follow this stuff year-round.
Well, look at the patience level. There's no patience level anymore. You saw Lovie Smith 2 years. You saw, I remember, what was it? Rob Chudzinski was a coach many liked in Cleveland 1 year. I mean, I was shocked Dennis Allen got 3 years. I mean, there's no, you know, my son said to me, Dad, why is there 6-7 coaches? There's only 32 jobs in the NFL. Why is there 6-7 availabilities every year? And you'll see it next year. You know, you'll see guys on the hot seat. Right now, Jason Garrett's on the hot seat. You know that. Okay.
Yep.
Jim Caldwell's on the hot seat. And there'll be a guy that's been on the job 2 years okay, Rex Ryan's on the hot seat. Terry Pegula came out last week and said, I want more production out of my team next year. So we'll get into that as the season gets closer, but it's amazing that there's such pressure to win. And I go back to something we said earlier in the show, I'd be shocked. There's not some kind of clinic. There's not some kind of budget to get better. I mean, you just can't have these bad backup quarterbacks. You know, you can't have a guy. I mean, look, you just can't have a drop off from an Aaron Rodgers to a Scott Tolzien. You see it; it doesn't work. You can't have a Carson Palmer having a great year last year to a Ryan Lindley, who's out of the league. You just can't have it. I mean, Ryan Nassib is a backup quarterback to Eli Manning. He's never played. It's just not fair. It's the league really strives for is competition. And look at no one's talking about the number one offense in the NFL, which is the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the number one defense in the NFL, which is the Denver Broncos, because there's injury. We're talking about the injuries. It won't be the number one offense. Then again, watch me be wrong. Watch Landry Jones go in there and throw up for 300 yards. You know, I doubt it. And then where's Michael Vick in all this? Michael Vick is his career over? He's in uniform. He had a sprained ankle, which kept him out 7-8 weeks ago. I mean, why isn't he playing over Landry Jones? I'd rather have Michael Vick on the field this Sunday because of his mobility with the great defense and the fact that he's been in playoff games before and his experience. I'd much rather have Michael Vick quarterbacking that team with that Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. I just would if I'm a Steelers fan. But that being said, you know, you're going to see guys retire this year. You're going to see guys out of the league. To wrap it up, love Chip Kelly and Dirk Cutter and their in Tampa Bay and Chip Kelly with 49ers. Question marks about Ben McAdoo because you're just creating more of the same. It's the same team, same coaching staff. I mean, yeah, it's, but there'll be more stories to talk about next week. And I just hope. I mean, did you really think this past weekend's games were great? Any of them? They were good. Of course, the Kansas City Houston game was horrible, but I saw a lot of bad football.
The three games were at least interesting. At least there was some drama there. Was it great football? No, but I think, you know, we talk about parity or is it just mediocrity? And in some respects, you go back to the injuries, and that's going to be a big part of it. And that's also part of having parity. Sometimes you're just going to get middle of the road teams.
And I always look for this and like to bring it up. And if we have a couple seconds here, we're just going to, if you allow me to pontificate, I'm always looking for the owner in this league, because you have the owner that's interesting more in winning than they are the financial bucks. And Jeffrey Lurie, who's made his billions as a phenomenal Hollywood producer. He owns the Philadelphia Eagles. He made a ton of money. Chip Kelly came out to an interview. He knew Tim Tebow wasn't good enough to make his football team. Look at the jerseys they sold. Jimmy Haslam got the money back. He spent Johnny Manziel's total 3-year contract with a signing bonus is $18 million. Johnny Manziel's got $16 million of that. $2 million do this big deal, do if he's on the roster March 1st, which I doubt. He's made the money back in jerseys. Okay, I'm telling you. So are those the guys you want really owning your team? Because, I know when they drafted Johnny Manziel, they thought more. I never thought it was a good draft pick. I thought, here we go again with the Browns, with the Brandon Whedons and the Tim Couches and the Charlie Fries and the Brady Quinns, high draft picks. And Brown fans will agree with me on this. I want to see what Jerry Jones does with this. I think that team has been so judged this year on the amount of character issues they have in their team with Greg Hardy, Lyle Collins, Randy Gregory, the old Raider Rondell McClain. There's a lot of guys on that Dallas Cowboy team that missed practices, missed meetings, and just it went unsaid because the drama just made them look bad, and they kind of hit it and stuff like that. But there's a lot of dysfunction in that building with the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, so do you want to bring John? If you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, there's a ton of them in America. Do you want to bring Johnny Manziel in that locker room?
And there's going to be people who will, but
why
is that what you want your team? No.
Why would you want Johnny Manziel in your locker room? Why? What is he showing you? You know.
Well, I'm saying fans. There are going to be some fans who are going to want that drama.
Well, I you know what? This is where I differ from the fans nowadays, and this pop culture that you've written about in your books, and you know the social media thing. It's when you brought up Ray Nitschke and Dick Butkus and guys from the past, it was all about winning. It's all about winning. Okay, that's what it's all about. It's about winning. And when you bring a guy like that in your locker room who just showed that he did everything he could to be the spoiled brat and get the hell out of Cleveland and not listen to the rules, not go to meetings, you know, go to Vegas and stuff like that, why wouldn't he continue that in Dallas? He's a spoiled brat. He was pissed off when Brian Hoyer beat him out. He said it, couldn't believe it. You know, the Browns were 7-4 under Brian Hoyer. Remember that before he got injured. Got pissed off when Josh McCown beat him out. Tony Romo was a better quarterback than Josh McCown and Brian Hoyer combined. So what makes Johnny Manziel think he's going to play? That's what bothers me. Okay. Look, the Raiders had a guy named
DeMarcus
Russell.
I think there's a spot for him in Montreal.
Yeah, maybe at one of the Roulant Views or something like that. yeah. You know, it's funny. But you bring up about the celebrity of players, and I get pissed off at guys that you know it's not about the winning and this and that. I can't tell you how many times my sources told me that Tim Tebow was offered $1 million contract to go up to Canada, which is just further the careers of the Doug Flutie's and the Warren Moons and the Jeff Garcias. And you saw Kurt Warner had to go to the Arena Football League, and he's a Hall of Fame finalist this year, might get in. When I see guys like that not go to Canada, and Johnny Manziel said he refers not to go to Canada, There you go. It's not about winning. It's about
your
celebrity, and then you know it's not about getting yourself better in the game. And maybe that's, you know, it's funny you bring it up. Maybe that's what the league needs. Maybe the league needs some guys to go up there so they can become better backup quarterbacks and get some. You know, the Canadian Football League has a deal with the National Football League with them. When their season ends in October, late October.
Yeah.
That their players are available to NFL teams. And I can't think of the linebacker that plays for the – his name's Sam something. He plays with the Patriots, but Belichick grabbed him late earlier in the season, and he had 5 tackles in his first game. You know, so,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know why I thought that. It's just something you stumbled into, being as funny as you are without your black eye, is you mentioned Montreal, but why the league should explore that is sending some of their guys up there. Play up there till the season ends, and then
absolutely,
you know, because it kills me that this is the year the backup quarterback and how many backup quarterbacks really failed. We saw it last year with Ryan. I've said 1,000 times. Ryan Lindley and Bruce Arians said this is ridiculous. We have to have a better system here. We have to have enough money in the salary cap that we're not strapped every year, because the quarterback is your most essential position on the football team. That's the guy that touches the ball the most of anyone on your team. He's the one that, well, you live and die by him. And if I couldn't, you know, Chase Daniels, a backup quarterback to Alex Smith. Okay, you're going to see Landry Jones. All right, now Denver's in the best situation because Brock Osweiler is actually a guy who they're grooming to be the quarterback. And most of these guys playing this weekend are on team. Remember Derek Anderson with Cleveland for a year? He's a back. He's 106 years old. He's a backup quarterback to Cam Newton. All right?
Yeah.
I don't even know who the back. I know everything about football. I couldn't tell you the backup quarterback is Russell Wilson, because we haven't had to explore. I didn't look into that. I didn't do my research. Shame on me. I don't know the backup quarterback is Russell Wilson.
Well, we'll have to figure out next week, and hopefully it doesn't happen that we find out on Sunday.
Exactly. All right. I've wasted enough of my breath on you.
All right, Boychik. We've been talking with our expert, Eric Snyder, author of a book on the Raiders and Raider Nation. He's also on the Power Hour on 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. Boychik, thanks.
Two things we got to establish today. You use a pump, and I know how to take a dump.
And you're a poet, and you don't know it. All right, folks, you can follow me, my coverage on Twitter and Facebook on John Daly Sports. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for following us. Thanks for putting up with us. We're going to catch you next week. Take care, Boychik.
You too, buddy.
For more on John Daly, including his blog postings and instructional videos, go to informnotinflamed.com.